Art at the End of the World is brought to you by Salter Street Brewery, a beer haven in Toronto's East End. You can visit Salter Street Brewery just south of Queen Street East near Broadview. They have limited parking, or get off the 501 streetcar at Queen and Salter and discover this hidden gem. Salter is made up of a small, passionate team of beer lovers. All the beers are made right there on site. Riverside Pilsner is the flagship Salter Street beer, which is also available in LCBO's select beer stores and some grocery stores. Call in and relax in this cottage vibe brewery, enjoy a great beer, or take some fresh beer to go in their hand-filled howlers and, of course, their tall boy cans. Salter Street Brewery is a perfect stop on your East End beer tour. It's dog-friendly, available for private events, and features live music on select Saturdays. It's open noon to 9 p.m. every day, salterstreetbrewery.com, or check them out on Instagram or Facebook. That's at Salter Street Brewery. Boom! Hello, greetings, welcome. It's Art at the End of the World, the podcast that features artists, entertainers, and cultural leaders speaking about what it is to make art here at the end. My name is Mark Wigmore, and yes, this is a show that attempts to dig a little deeper. You're going to hear what I hope is an engaging and entertaining conversation with an interesting personality, but we're also looking to sort out some of the big issues facing our world today and how artists are reflecting on them and how their art or maybe their organization is responding to the big stuff, the fractured media landscape, cultural tipping points, the purgatory of identity politics, the mania of social media, and what better group of people to help us through the bog of our modern age than comedians. The jesters, the fools who dare to get their hands dirty with the big stories and the issues of the day. So that's the theme of our show today. Welcome. We're going to talk funny people and how they sift through the muck. Thank you very much for joining me on this second episode. And let me thank the hundreds of people who listened to the first episode with theater star Britta Johnson. Wasn't she great? You can listen to that for free at any time. You simply head to artattheendoftheworld.com, SoundCloud, YouTube soon, I promise, iTunes, Stitcher. And thank you to all the arts organizations that got behind the episode, Outside the March Theater, Canadian Stage, The Old Globe out of San Diego, who helped us out, The Musical Stage Company, and Now Magazine put out a nice little piece on the show, which was fantastic. You can read about that as well. Also, our sponsors, Kerner Hall at the Royal Conservatory, Salter Street Brewery, and Red Eye Media, they all put out the good word that Art at the End of the World is available for streaming and download and subscription. So thanks to everybody who made that first episode really pop. Of course, it's available, it's evergreen. It's available from here on out. And I have to say, most importantly for me, anyway, is that more people know about Britta Johnson. She's so great. And the bonus episode that we put out on Thursday is also available. And on that, you get to hear Britta count down her five favorite musicals. And we play a little bit of each musical as well. So check that out. It's really, really fun. If you're excited about the idea behind this podcast, consider supporting it in a fundamental way. Arts and culture in Toronto, in Canada, around the world. That's what we do here. And you can help by becoming a patron. Simply head to patreon.com/artattheendoftheworld and click on one of the three or four tiers available. And a lot of people did this week, so thank you for that. And a reminder, when you come in at the $5 mark, I'm going to send you some bonus content and access to each episode early. So a little bit of incentive there, patreon.com/artattheendoftheworld. So yes, we are talking comedy today. And I want to tell you all about my trip to Comedy Bar here in Toronto. Boy, this is where the cool kids hang out. And I also want to introduce today's special guest, comedian Chris Locke. And I am so thrilled that he's here. We have quite a history together. We have a story to tell. And he's becoming just one of the great, great stand-up comedy talents in this country. And I'm so pleased with the conversation that we had. It was so fun to put it together. But first, Art at the End of the World is brought to you by Superframe and superframe.ca. Superframe offers custom archival framing with a mandate to enhance and protect artwork, but not compete for attention with that artwork. As an art-focused frame shop, Superframe only offers the highest quality frames and materials. They specialize in custom milled hardwood moldings, which they finish in a wide range of stains and lacquers. They mill and stock their most popular profiles in quantity to ensure the fastest possible turnaround, but also are able to design any custom profile with little notice. Superframe offers water gilding and photo framing, and their services include professional installation, transportation, and display systems. Visit superframe.ca to learn about all of the services offered at Superframe, and you can make an appointment there as well to visit their workshop at 100 Geary Avenue in downtown Toronto. Superframe. Check them out at superframe.ca. All right. So last weekend, I made my way, kind of embarrassed to say, actually, my first trip to Comedy Bar in downtown Toronto. I'd poked my head in a few times to see what it's all about. But this was really my first time. And I knew today's guest, Chris Locke, had performed there had a glut of performances over the years. He's been there a lot. And so many other people that I admire from the comedy world as well. Mark Little from Picnic Face and the new CBC show Cavendish. He's performed there a lot. Ann Pornell, who is with the Second City mainly these days and also on This Hour Has 22 Minutes. She performed at Comedy Bar a lot. Sean Cullen, Saturday Night Live's Chris Redd was just there. So knowing that Chris Locke has performed there a lot, I figured it was my duty to get a better understanding of the place. So I actually got a hold of most of the people that I just mentioned and one of the founders, Gary Rideout. Gary, have I got your last name right? Gary Rideout. And you can read all about my impressions of Comedy Bar at signaltoronto.com. That's signaltoronto.com. Great website. And you just look for the arts section on the front page and dig into my little account of my journey. We had such a great time. I went with my photographer friend, Dustin Rabin. And it was a review that featured six stand-up comedians. And by the end of the night, there really wasn't anything that hadn't been poked at or prodded or lampooned or simply discussed in that stand-up format. And it was a reminder to me that comedians may just be the perfect guests for Art at the End of the World, this podcast, because they are dissecting the complicated world around us at all times. Everything was on the table that night. Feminism, racism, Me Too, addiction issues, sex issues, millennial angst, wealth inequality, gender issues. It was all there. It was hilarious. And I just love my time at Comedy Bar. So once again, check out that article at signaltoronto.com. These are the people, right? These are the people who pull back the curtain and in a very direct way deal with the big stuff, the big topics, the big work. It was really an inspiring night. Of course, that brings us to our guest, Chris Locke, who certainly knows how to play around with big ideas and push back. He has opinions. He can be very silly. But before we get to Chris, Art at the End of the World is brought to you by Kerner Hall at the Royal Conservatory of Music, reminding you that it is Kerner Hall's 10th anniversary concert season. The Toronto Star has said of Kerner Hall, quote, the greatest venue in the city and magnificent in its acoustics as much as in its design. Every season features nearly 100 spectacular concerts by the world's top classical, jazz, roots, and world music artists. And news alert here, a reminder that the Royal Conservatory previewed the 11th season of Kerner Hall this past week, a great roster for 2019-2020. Wynton Marsalis with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra was announced, Chucho Valdez, the Bright Up Brothers, I love the Bright Up Brothers, and a fantastic classical lineup as well, and many more. Subscriptions for the 11th season go on sale this Friday, February 8th at 10 a.m., and then tickets go on sale on Friday, February 15th, 2019 at 10 a.m. Kerner Hall, one of the finest concert venues in the world, no matter who is performing. See the lineup at rcmusic.com/performance. All right, so Chris Locke, this man has quite the CV, and you may have seen him on the last season of Baroness von Sketch. I love that show. I hope you do as well. He helped write some of the sketches for the season as well. I know he's helping on the next season. He was really great on Mr. D. performing alongside his wife. Of course, that was on CBC. His Instagram characters, Nature Boy and City Boy, are so funny. So you can check those out on Instagram. He did this really, really funny series on Funny or Die called Learning with Nature. Chris is just a really, just a funny guy. And I think he's best known in comedy circles for his stand-up. I mean, he's a big draw no matter where he goes, that's for sure. Tours all over North America. He was named Toronto's best stand-up comedian a few years back in Now Magazine. He won the Canadian Comedy Award for Best Male Stand-Up. Chris is a thing. But here's the deal. I used to know Chris Locke fairly well. We were next-door neighbors in the Parkdale neighborhood in Toronto for several years. And I don't know if we left on bad terms, but I'm going to go ahead and gauge it as maybe not great. It was bad enough that we actually haven't spoken for about 15 years. So you do the math on that, little dicey. And I thought, what better way to hash out our troubles than on this podcast and maybe catch up with his career? So I invited him to my house to record this podcast, and he agreed. And I'll say that I had a few nerves going into this one, but I'm so happy with how it turned out. He's a comedian, and he's really a good person to talk about art at the end of the world. So here we are from my living room. This is me with comic phenomenon Chris Locke.
Yeah, I might put my podcast on the back burner for a bit. I'm kind of busy, but that's what I did. I did a traveling sort of Zoom H4N. I'd get people to come to my apartment for the first like couple years, but then the kids were, or my daughter was born, and it got a little tricky. So
it's totally tricky. You got two kids now? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I have a 2.5-year-old and a 2-month-year-old.
Okay, that's a busy household.
Yeah, it's like cute little girls that are funny and smart already. You got to see them. So it was just like put the stuff in a backpack, and I'd meet people and record wherever they were.
Right.
Yeah.
But you've done a ton of episodes.
Yeah, but I don't think I didn't make 100 because of like schedule. I never could keep up with a solid schedule.
So you never went like, okay, one a week, or you just kind of put
it I would make it in a huge announcement that I am doing that.
Right.
And then it would last a few weeks, and then something would come up. Like I'd have a baby. So, or I'd be on the road for 10 days or something.
My plan for that was let's just wait until I have enough episodes.
Yeah, because this isn't released yet, right?
No.
Hey, what's up? You're listening to a podcast that isn't out yet.
Well, it will be when they hear that.
No, you can't hear this. People listening right now can't hear this.
Let me refresh your memory on something that happened. You were the person who introduced me to David Cross, which seems like a ridiculous thing to say now because he's one of the most famous comedians out there.
Yeah.
But I remember you were in the apartment next to me. You said, hey, you got to check this out. And I think, was it a double album?
It's a double album called Shut Up, You Fucking Baby.
I used to think it was Shut the Fuck Up, You Fucking Baby. But
no, it's just one fuck.
Good memory.
Yeah, that I guess, you know what? I didn't put that on my list, but it was hugely influential at the time, for sure.
That's
right.
I was
like, wow, this guy is telling it like it is with zest and, you know, panache. But I was also like already a huge fan of his from Mr. Show, the sketch show that he did with Bob Odenkirk.
A lot of people compare that to Monty Python at that
point. Yeah, and I think they were even like, it's basically a mix between Monty Python's Flying Circus and SCTV.
A couple years later, in fact, it was 2009, I wrote this down, I heard David Cross was coming to town, so I just kind of bought a ticket. It was Massey Hall.
Yeah.
And I went with my wife, and it ended up being this show with Louis C.K., Arish Barker, Sarah Silverman, Todd Glass, John Mulaney, and David Cross.
And me. Oh, no, no, I wasn't on that one. Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that an unbelievable lineup?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It must have been part of JFL 42 or something. Or, oh, no, 2009. That's too early.
Yeah, it's too early for that.
Like, oh, yeah. Must have been a one-off just for last production.
It was. And I think even Sarah Silverman at the time said, can you believe what's happening here tonight? But it was great.
I think I remember that show being in the city, but I didn't see it. Yeah.
That was one of the things I noticed about you right away back in, I guess we're going back here to 2004. Three or four.
I moved out of there in 2003. We were neighbors. We were neighbors.
Yeah, we shared a porch at a building, and we weren't quite
And so did roommates. A lot of the drifters from the halfway house.
Yeah. They were right
they
next
came
door
on that porch a lot asking me for cigarettes. Yeah.
In the Parkdale neighborhood of Toronto, and we shared a porch. And so we would just share ideas about pop culture. But it was an admiration of you because you seemed to have your fingers into all sorts of things that I wasn't aware of, whether it be music or comedy.
Oh, really?
Just went a little deeper on some of these genres than perhaps I was used to.
And I guess I kind of go... I'm into that stuff.
Would you call yourself a guy who was nerding out at that point?
Yeah, especially starting in comedy, I was obviously hungry to learn everything.
Yeah.
Like, I remember a couple years before I moved into that apartment, I lived in the Junction by myself and just bought every old VHS of like the Marx Brothers and W.C. Fields and all that kind of stuff. That's, and like
W.C. Fields by yourself in the Junction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get out of here, kid.
Yeah, you bother me. And I was like taking notes like, you bother me. No, but like, I don't even know. People attribute that quote to him, but I don't even know if it's him. Or
I remember my dad would go crazy about him.
I love him.
And the Three Stooges. And my mother flatly saying, no, the kids cannot watch that material on television.
I guess the Three Stooges, they're really smashing each other in the
they
head.
Really are. It's pretty violent, I suppose.
Yeah, W.C. Fields is different, though. He's got a razor sharp wit. He was literally a genius. I'm an old school comedy head, I guess. When I need to reset myself, get re-inspired, I go back to the very old guys because they didn't even know Hollywood was coming at first.
Right.
So they would just travel,
and do vaudeville kind of thing.
Yeah, so it was like thickly in their blood, embedded in their blood before even the idea of making a short, you know?
Right.
Like Chaplin was just like, you know, blowing theaters apart as some drunk character, like way before he made a short or anything like that. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm inspired by those guys that do it for the love first, you know?
Yeah. And, well, Chaplin obviously... And guys like Buster Keaton are these sort of masters of visual, physical comedy. But then the joke guys, you know, there is that distilled essence of what they do.
It's crazy.
It's so down to the very bottom of what makes us laugh. You
it's
know?
Crazy. Yeah, because they had some of the best writers ever in the biz write for the Marx Brothers, obviously. But it doesn't matter if you can still take Groucho by himself and he'll be like as quick as hell.
Right.
Because he's... Yeah, he's benefiting from George S. Kaufman and Perlman and all these guys, but he clearly literally grew up in that world. So his wit is just like, you know what I mean? Like you can see that on, I mean, I think, you know, when you watch You Bet Your Life or something, he's obviously some of that stuff is set up, but he's clearly quick.
There seems to be a grumpiness around his later period talk show where... People seem to think he's really mailing it in at that point, but
really,
yeah. I don't know. Towards the end of his
maybe it
life
depends on which one you watch.
Yeah,
I remember watching an old '70s talk show that he did with Bill Cosby, and he was kind of being condescending to Cosby, even though he loved Cosby at the time. But also, who cares about Cosby now? The guy's a
it's impossible subject when it comes to actual comedy. Craft,
it's insane,
right? I mean, what do you
know? What when our last remnants of our generation that remembered the early one fizzles out, they're gonna make a movie about him, and it's gonna be like a movie like about Ed Gein or something,
right?
Or Ted Bundy.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a
psycho
crazy movie.
There will
about a monster.
The Huxtable thing will be an afterthought.
Yeah. But so anyways, but then when you watch Groucho on like Dick Cavett or something.
Yeah.
Even I saw one with him with William, because this is the beauty of YouTube now. Saw one with him with William F. Buckley. He's still charming and fun. So I don't know. I'd say seek some of those ones out.
It was always kind of fun to watch F. Buckley anyway, because he, you know, made being an asshole look so hilarious. Sometimes.
I know. He's a confounding character because he's so... Clearly,
that mid-Atlantic
intelligent,
voice,
and when you're that intelligent, to still be a religious, you know, conservative, it's like it's like an early version of being a troll.
Yeah,
it's just like you're literally taking the piss out of people with feelings
in a very in a very literary way, and with these complete thoughts, and it's, just being able to drill you down.
It's just totally a personality. I don't even think at the end of the day it goes back to a belief system. It's a personality type, right?
So you had all these early comedians that you were loving and yeah. imbibing. And
this tea has really got me chatting already, eh?
It's funny. Earl Grey can get you going.
Earl Grey is in my veins.
I'm in the Big Brothers program, and I have a little brother, and I took him to a Chinese restaurant downtown a couple weeks ago.
Did you have some green tea?
And they just started pouring this Chinese tea, this green tea. Yeah. And I don't know if it's actually green tea. It looked like black tea to me.
Oh, okay.
But as we were putting it down, we just noticed our conversation was just getting faster and faster. And
yeah.
the kid was just losing it. So beware.
Oh, man. Are you sure you want them to hear this? You got your little brother all jacked up?
Yeah, jacked up on
afternoon tea.
Black tea at the Chinese restaurant.
I had this craving. I couldn't quit it. It was for chicken McNuggets, right? And I couldn't quit it. And I walked up to the mid counter or whatever, right? And I ordered 10 McNuggets with honey sauce and barbecue sauce in it. And then I grabbed the bag and split, right? Because I don't know what you guys do in Montreal, but in Toronto, where I'm from, you don't eat by yourself in a McDonald's, right? Like, if you're by yourself in a McDonald's, then everyone else there thinks you're missing from some hospital, right? They're like, should we help this guy? That McNugget's been in the honey for 5 minutes, you know? And then you hear him, you're like, I'm soaking up the flavor, you know? Mind your bees. So I grab the McNuggets to split, like I said, eat them somewhere else. I forget where, like the dark shadows or whatever. And as I'm going to eat them somewhere else, I'm jaywalking across this busy street. And as I'm jaywalking, this thought hits me. I'm like, holy crow. What if a car hits me right now and this is how they find me? Right? Just some schlubby guy with chicken McNuggets strewn all over his dead body and the honey sauce teetering on the tip of my nose. And then everyone on the street sees that and they're like, oh my God, look what happened to that simple man. Someone notify his caregiver, let them know there's been an incident, you know? Like, that's embarrassing to me, right? That's not how I wanna die, right? I wanna die a cool way, right? Like, by playing a guitar solo for too long or something. You know what I mean? Just like, ew, ah, peace, you know? Like,
now that you are where you are,
yeah,
like any craft, you start to learn the tricks of the trades, you know what all the jargon is, you know how to put together 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour.
Yeah.
Is there still magic in it for you? Because I know it's changed for me as I listen to podcasters and broadcasters and interviewers over the years. I sort of have an idea of what they're attempting to do, and it must be the same for you.
It's kind of like, it's always fun at the end of the day.
Yeah.
There is a difference between the professional gig and the gig that you wanted to do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's like, if I just throw like a ragtag show together in a city where I'm producing it and like maybe 100 people come out, then I'm getting loose.
Right.
You know? And they came to see me and that's very nice. And so I do everything I want.
I'm getting older, obviously, like all of us, but I'm trying to, like, you know, dress cool still, but I don't think I look... Yeah, exactly. That's it. No, I'll take that. That's very nice. Because I feel like now when I try to dress cool, I just look like one of those dads that's like, oh, if you kids need me, I'll be outside painting the sailboat, you know? And then you look outside, like, we don't have a sailboat, and I'm just napping in the grass. And then you're like, Mom, do you still love this guy? And she's like, I love certain things about him from the past.
You know, I was just in a club recently in another part of the country, and it was a little bit suburban, a little bit conservative. So, you know, they were with me the whole time, and it was fun, but there's a part of me that's like manicuring that set a little bit.
Well, even just watching your different sets on YouTube, you can see the ones where you are thinking to yourself, this is kind of my room and I'm going to work it a little bit. And then here's where I know I need to follow a bit of a line into what I've put together here.
Yeah. Like, maybe I should say this cause I don't mind, but like, I don't care anymore, but like you work really hard to get a Just for Last taping in this country,
sure.
But, it's hard to promote those because they are really like pacified and sterile, to be honest, to comparatively to like, man, just come and see me. Because I do other stuff too in comedy, but stand-up is my first leading thing. But like, I could honestly do rooms full of 30 to 50 people for the rest of my life, like intimate rooms like that, and I would be 100% happy.
Right.
Yeah, like when I listen to like, Jim Gaffigan is obviously this ginormous star in stand-up, but when you listen to his albums, you know, the laugh track sounds like it's been faded in and out.
Right.
It's just this theater reaction of like 3,000 people or something, or probably more. That'd be funny if Jim Gaffigan was like, hey, it's way more. But
I mean, he just did that amphitheater tour this summer.
So yeah.
That would have been like 20,000.
Yeah, there you go.
Sure.
And he's like, why is this guy talking about pizza again? And it's like, ah. That's what the laughter sounds like. Just a wave of, ah. And he's so punchline heavy that you start getting pulled out of it. It was like, this sounds weird.
Is he going to talk about fries?
Yeah. Yeah,
although, you know, food, you're no stranger from the food humor.
No, I do food humor. Like, what am I going to do? I'm like a fat white guy.
It's going to be part of it.
Yeah.
No, but going back to the craft side of things.
Food hasn't been offended yet, right. As far as I've seen on Twitter.
We'll see. We are in the age of
hamburgers are going to be like, hey.
Age of outrage, for sure. But not only the craft from what you do, but let's say even, you know, watching some of the comedians or, you know, that maybe you just got joy from in the past because it was almost like a magic show. I mean, it's surely now you can watch something and go, okay, like I can see how that was constructed.
Or, yeah, it takes a lot to make me laugh. That's why I think like my close friends are my favorite comedians, because I've got a bunch of steps past what they're doing to know how they got there type of thing. Like we have a shorthand with our humor, so... You know, guys like James Hartnett or Tim Gilbert or something like that. I'm just like, woo! I almost like get excited and cheer because
I noticed that
it's real live. Yeah.
On your social media, you are just a huge supporter of the guys that you really believe in, and you can get out there to.
And everyone's doing, like, I don't have to be, you know, like they're all doing great, so it's nice. And vice versa, I think, you know, but that's what happens. It's like sort of support group, because you start off in such a weird low place,
right,
that if you find people with similar sensibilities, it's like it is almost like a running off to join the circus type of thing.
Sure.
You're like, help me, deep down in your psyche, you know.
What were those first shows for you where you were finally saying, okay,
well, like, that's when we first met, that's the world I was living in.
So you were,
it was like dirty wet basements,
open mics, and, so like 2003 2004.
Yeah.
To that sort of
2002 area. Because the thing is, I don't know if you remember, but my friend Brian Barlow and I had a sketch troupe at that time called the Gerg, and then we got nominated for this TV thing called the Cream of Comedy at the time, and that was big.
I vaguely remember that.
So I was like, oh, I'm gonna be, this is it. I've cracked the. It didn't matter. It didn't. No. It even like got worse after that, because my expectations were like, I had to like, it took a year or two for me to learn like, no, I'm like way starting.
Are you telling me this podcast isn't going to make me an internet superstar?
It is now with this episode. Am I right?
We, you know, you and I actually haven't really, like, we've chatted back and forth on, you know, email or Facebook here and there over the years, but we haven't really seen each other since the final days of that Parkdale place. And, we were talking about it a little bit before we hit record here, but that was a sort of a wild time in both of our lives. I was running around figuring out radio. You were running around figuring out comedy
and life.
And you were with a woman living there, and we sort of left on crazy terms. I always felt a little bit bad about that.
Yeah, I had to run away from that apartment.
Right, run away. Like, I remember actually you, like, maybe physically actually leaving, like, just walking away. Is that an unfair memory?
She was visiting, like, her mom one night. We had already decided that we were broken up and not going to be together. And then...
So that's tricky.
My friend left around... Or my friend lived, sorry, around, like, 3 blocks away.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, one night... when she was doing that, visiting her parents, I took everything. I moved all my stuff out.
Right. And that...
and left the apartment with all her stuff in it, which is kind of a rash thing to do.
Right.
But it was, like, very traumatic for me.
It was. Yeah, it was... I mean...
I don't know, like, what she's like now or what she's up to now, but that was, like... I will say it was, like, an early youth, way too serious, too fast relationship, and it was... not good for both of us, I'm sure.
I remember having to come to her rescue sometimes. Like, you'd be at work or something, and she'd, you know, have like a nail in her thumb or something like
that. Yeah, but I remember that day very clearly. Yeah, right. And so she stapled her thumb with a power stapler. And to be honest, the couple voicemails I got at work was just screaming. No words. See, wow. Mark, you don't know, okay? Like, that's kind of why I left in a huff. Right. Anyways, so you don't know. So it was intense.
You're right. I don't know.
So what do I think? Do I think that's a staple in the thumb? Or do I think that, like, an army of masked men are in my apartment?
Right. God knows what.
You know, sure. Punching her in the face and doing worse.
Right.
So I'm having a million heart attacks. Uh-huh. And let me tell you another thing about myself at the time. I ate Taco Bell every week.
Right.
I ate like Burger King every week.
Sure.
I was out at night trying to be a comedian, drinking all night, and I smoked a pack a day.
Yeah, I remember you were a smoker. Yeah.
So my physical health was really shit. So my anxiety was always through the roof. And at that age, like 24, 25, I didn't know what anxiety was yet until it dropped like a hammer.
Right.
So I was like learning everything pretty fast.
Well, I was too. And I was just sort of contending with, usually it was some sort of difficult moment for her, some sort of 5-alarm fire over something. And I would do my best to kind of deal with it. And you and I would talk as friends and kind of, you know, yammer on about comedy or music or what have you. And then it all kind of fell apart relatively quickly. And I always felt really bad about it because I know there was this... one moment where you kind of came to me and you were really upset about how you had been treated and you were clearly upset.
And you took her side.
I didn't take her side, but I tried to say, hey, look, you're putting me in an awkward position as I've had to be her friend through some difficult times. And obviously I'm your friend. And you can feel however you want to feel, but I think, you know, I don't know if I want to be dragged into this, the hate and the vitriol towards this person right now. And clearly you were upset. And then I was like, after that, we never talked. And I felt like, I don't know if I handled that poorly or what I did, but, I always felt bad about it and wish we had.
It was just a traumatic situation.
Left on
I
better,
had to get out.
Better in better situation.
It's yeah. If anything, it would have just been connected to just a pile of crap.
Right.
But yeah, I'm here. It doesn't matter. It's okay.
Well, I mean, I'm just more thinking about you and I.
When you're young and you're dumb like that, you can't put the pieces together naturally without having time and a bird's eye view to look at it. Like you don't learn how to be reasonable in the moment.
Right.
You got these wild emotions. You know, you're not taking care of yourself. You don't know anything. You know, you're still sort of like, even I don't care what people say, at 25 or 24 or something, you're still like a kid free falling for quite a while.
You are.
You start really like getting it together maybe around 30, I'd say.
Yeah, even my daughter who's 21 now, she seems very grown up and I see she's taking on a lot and I just think to myself, gosh.
Yeah.
You know, I hope she's got it, you know, put on the rails as much as she makes it sound like she has, you know. Years later, I think it was in 2012, I'm reading Now magazine, and I think I'd seen you in a few commercials and so on, but it says, voted best comedian in the city of Toronto. And I thought to myself, I can't believe this. This is a guy I used to know. And so instantly I found out that you were headlining, I think it was like 3 or 4 nights at Yuck Yucks or something. Oh, yeah. Like. Does that seem right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I instantly bought a ticket with a friend of mine and we came to see you.
Did you like the show?
I loved it.
Sweet.
It was so funny and I was just so happy for you. Oh. I was so thrilled and I could see that.
Because even me 2018 now is being like, oh shit, how good was 2012 me?
You 2012 I mean? You. It was pretty strong.
Okay, sweet, sweet.
I think you came out.
Be even way better now. Baby.
And you came you came running out and
that's
you
nice,
made
nice.
A joke about farting in your track pants, it seems to me.
Yeah.
Do you remember
probably.
That one at all?
Maybe.
It was a good opener.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt strange. It was very, very funny.
For Yuck Yucks Club, too, I feel like that's right on the mark.
Right.
You know, it gets everybody together, all kinds of
that's right.
diverse crowd. Come out as relatable as possible.
Are you a Toronto guy through and through? Did you grow up here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, born in the beat, like, born at... whatever, Women's Hospital on...
right.
What is it? University?
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's a few. There's a bunch of them.
Oh, I can't remember the hospital.
There's
Mount Sinai.
There's, a few different ones there.
Yeah. Yeah, first thing I said when I was born was, is this thing on? Am I right? And then lived in the beaches until I was about six or seven.
Sort of rare. Like, there's not a lot of forever Torontonians. I've spoken
but then
to a few people.
Moved from beaches to Etobicoke area.
Okay.
So that's the qualifier. Because then I was by, like, Roy York in Dundas area. If yeah. I don't know if and then...
That's Rheostatic's country.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that's where they all came up.
Oh, gee. You know who else used to live around me?
Who's that?
Speaking of like weird old Canadian indie, Cowboy Junkies,
right,
had a house that near there that they jammed in.
I saw a picture of them,
and that's like a pretty well off neighborhood. The one I'm thinking of that they were in,
right. I saw a picture of them the other day, and they are like older Cowboy Junkies now. I guess we're all getting older.
But, yeah, yeah. You know, God,
I just hadn't seen a picture of them in a while.
I just shaved my face off to see, like, I had a not my face off. I shaved the mustache off to see my face.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how I feel. It kind of looks like, I don't know, like yogurt.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I just think of yogurt when I look at my face in the mirror.
So brothers, sisters? You...
Do I have them?
Yeah.
I have like, two half-sisters. One I grew up with.
Okay.
And then one I didn't grow up with, but I'm close to both of them and they're great.
Yeah. How was growing up in beaches in Etobicoke?
So Etobicoke, I would say... Most of my, yeah, it was, I guess I've got that sort of like cliche of like a white suburban ennui. So I was in a punk band in high school and then right. I got into comedy.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, the type, you know, like pretty popular in high school, but I didn't care. I hated everything.
Right.
And, you know,
that's
smoked
one way.
Weed, all that stuff.
It's one way to be popular. I found.
Yeah.
Because I was never popular. And then the second I stopped caring, literally, it was like suddenly everybody wanted to shake my hand.
Well, yeah. On the inside, I was carrying my ass off.
Well, right.
But nobody knew. So I hide with like the stoners and the skaters and blah, blah, blah.
So half sisters, mom and dad split at some point or?
Yeah. Just before I was two.
Okay.
So I missed the mark with my first daughter and my wife now.
Right. That was, you knew that was the sweet spot.
Yeah, I was like, all right, we're doing this.
You're like, if I want to actually create a child that is anything like this, I should have got out earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, no. All right. No.
Came up with mom and...
Yeah, but my stepdad's been around since very early on, so it's right. all good.
How
yeah.
was that?
They met in the beaches. I remember going to his apartment down there. It was full of smoke. He had a roommate that smoked his ass off.
And right. Cigarettes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Something from
a bygone era, isn't it? My dad...
Like apartments full of smoke?
Yeah, my dad had friends who all were crazy smokers.
It was crazy. And, I think maybe my dad, I call him my dad now.
Right,
stepdad.
Sure.
He was like... I think that he was probably casual. Like he was like a beer drinking... He's a beer drinking hockey player from Montreal originally.
Right,
you know?
Right, right.
So I think he was casual too. But I remember going there when they were dating and I was probably like... 3 or something, and I was like, help, what's happening, it's on fire. And I just, it was just cigarette smoke, but I literally thought a house was burning down.
Right.
They took me into a fire. That's so 80s, right? I think that's like 81 or something, you know.
That
what I
is
mean?
That sweet spot of just that, you know, like hockey and cigarettes,
hockey,
and
Canada
stubbies and Canada,
yeah,
and,
for yeah, sure Molson sure. stubbies, yeah, you're right.
Right.
Yeah, and we had a cottage too.
Oh, you did?
And so it was pretty funny because I actually really like talking about this because it was quite a time. Because what happened was them dating and before getting up to getting married and even getting married, like those early years,
mm-hmm.
I'm basically this kid from another marriage and, you know, didn't think about psychology about that at all at the time. I was just going with the flow. And they have all these friends and they're a young couple still.
Right.
So I was basically growing up around giant parties all the time.
Right.
Like freaking, like I'd see people like getting wasted and like skinny dipping at the cottage and people going sailing and like just massive barbecues. So,
and it's also a cultural part of Ontario that I totally missed out as a kid growing up in BC because there just wasn't that cottage culture where it was this excuse to really.
Where did you grow up in BC again?
Let it hang out, Victoria.
Yeah. So I just played Hecklers.
Right.
Last weekend.
Okay. How'd that go?
I love it.
Right.
It's a blast. But it was fun in a fun way. I was giving them a hard time for being a little uptight.
Right. 'Cause
you know, it is obviously a A little bit more conservative there?
It is. And well,
but,
I mean,
but it's fun.
They've got a full-on hippie mayor right now.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, making everybody mad about all sorts of bike lanes.
Of course. Every time I go there, they're getting mad about some hippie shit.
Yeah. There is a lot of hippie shit. And, of course, they have this ongoing tent city, which, you know, for homeless.
Yeah, I learned about that.
People there. So that has been, you know, and, of course, any other city would have just cleaned it up and said, all right, forget about it. We'll figure something out. But, no, the tent city remains years.
I feel like you can't be a totally loose city if your downtown core has buildings that have that old British colonial facade.
Yeah.
Once you get those pillars going, you're getting uptight.
Yeah. And I mean, they say newlywed and nearly dead. And it really was a lot of sort of stodgy colonial rich people who live in fancy places. I mean, I grew up around a lot of that.
So yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
But Hecklers, the club, is a party. And I love everybody involved there. Like, we had a great time.
Yeah.
But I do... And as a comedian, it's fun to beat them on the head a little bit too. Be like, oh, shut up.
Did you play Vancouver too?
Yeah, I play the mix there usually when I go, and so I love it there.
That's a different crowd too. I mean, that's not a Victoria crowd.
Sort of like what we were talking about off the top.
Yeah.
The mix is like, you're in my world now, baby.
Yeah.
And the Hecklers is a bit more like, don't worry, I'll hold your hand through my world.
Sure.
You know, but it's still both fun, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I, of course, didn't have this, not to mention my parents certainly wouldn't have tied one on and had a great time, and they weren't maybe young enough to do that anyway by the time we came along as kids. But that must have been eye-opening. I always think that's pretty decent training to understand what you're going to be dealing with later as a teenager when that type of behavior suddenly shows up on your doorstep, you know? At least you've had some witness to it before.
At that point, though, they were like, you know, it was like reserved, like... Etobicoke, where we grew up, it's like, it's still in Toronto, but it's a suburban pocket for sure.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, it was funny getting to that phase. And then it was like, no, bad things don't exist.
Right.
You know?
we'll tuck this all away.
And so then I, you know, I'm a good combo of my mom and my real dad.
Right.
So, I, you know, they couldn't relate to me that well at that time. So I was a real bastard for sure.
Right. Just a pain in their butts.
Yeah.
Sure.
I kind of like having these memories now because I've gone to therapy for a couple of years. So it's all good.
What did
you got to? Hey, if you're listening, go to therapy. It's sweet. Makes you feel so nice.
Well, you get to talk about yourself.
Yeah.
That's
which
nice.
Is, you know.
And you hopefully get to work a few things out, which is nice. And I think when you have young kids like you do, you want to be able to, you know, be some sort of roadmap.
That. When my first daughter was born, 3 months later, my real dad passed away.
Okay.
So that was like, and then I was on the road like crazy. I did a Just for Laughs TV taping and I had these mega tours. And so
that's a lot of pushing down.
Yeah.
Grinding it out a bit.
Yeah. So about a year after that, I finally went to therapy for the first time.
Hmm.
But that was crazy. It was like a free fall for sure, mentally.
Right. It was just you were able to...
And all my friends would be like...
Let it out.
That have been to therapy would be like, go to therapy. Trust me. And I'd be like...
It's tough, right? I've tried to suggest it to people, and I know how important it's been for friends of mine, and it's made a big difference in their lives. And you just wish that certain other people in your life would... Give it a shot. It doesn't need the horrible stigma that maybe it used to have 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
It really cleans out your mind
and
creates some space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
So what was Real Dad's role in your growing up? Were you kind of seeing him on a regular basis or was he?
It was on and off. Yeah. It wasn't consistent.
Was it okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was
he fun dad?
He's outside the box.
Okay.
Yeah, and in fact,
you're just excited to talk about
this. If I have,
like,
anti-authority stuff or, like, DIY nature in me, it's a lot of it comes from him,
for sure. That sort of...
He was, like, living in a house in PEI that he bought with cash.
Right.
And just, like, basically trying to create a totally self-sufficient house before he passed away.
So sort of libertarian... Kind of just doing his own.
Down the rabbit hole on the old... As soon as the internet came out.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I know exactly.
In fact, he died from a heart condition, but I think that he might be a first early casualty of the internet.
Right.
I honestly think that.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't go to doctors because it didn't mesh with.
So Dr. Google, conspiracy theories,
yeah,
just general concern and paranoia about the world around him.
Yeah. And if there is some sort of afterlife where the dead can hear you, you know what I'm talking about, Dad. We talked about this.
But
I'll see you soon.
But so PEI, was that a recent move for him?
Yeah, I guess okay. It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was there for about 3 years. So he only saw my first daughter once through Skype.
Sounds like you've that's going to be the gift that keeps on giving for a while. That old man of yours.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I lost my dad too, not too long ago. We're and at that age, right? Are you noticing
so
that?
So now that I've shared time. Quite a bit, you have to dive into that relationship.
Well, my dad was very supportive at the last, I would say 10, 20 years, but it was very tricky growing up with my dad. Yeah. He had rage issues, as they say.
Yeah. What did he do?
He was, he worked, not the dream job. I think that was maybe part of it. He was a guy who went to your house and figured out how much income tax you had to pay. So he was with the assessment authority.
Oh, Christ.
And he really liked it because he could be outdoors a lot. I think it was...
Literally walking to the house?
Yeah, walking around houses. Yeah, so, yeah. And he would get to travel around BC and do things and see things. And he could, you know, make judgments about... you know, how communities were changing and so on. So
was he usually the bearer of bad news for these people?
Or, you know, he would be in court a lot of the year, you know, battling out with people saying, no, it's not worth this much, you know, so they could pay less.
So he's kind of a
property tax
de facto bad guy.
Kind of. Yeah. So there was that and yeah, he came up in a tough.
And you're like, I'm living my dream.
He really did want that. For us. I mean, he didn't necessarily know
life is suffering.
How to bridge us there because he hadn't necessarily followed that path in his life, but he really would be very encouraging of following, you know, your show business dreams, you know.
Yeah, I think you're Gen X, right?
I am.
And I'm like cusp sort of right. Gen X-y.
Well, what are you? You're 40.
78.
I think you're born 78, right?
Yeah.
You're 3 years after me. So yeah, you're.
When I was growing up, I was a Gen X, but now millennials are like you're Gen X,
right?
It's weird.
It is weird. See,
I'm in this like
my brother's
crappy midsection of like we got the internet, but not early enough.
My brother's 82, and he claims to be a millennial, and then I have arguments with him saying that no, I think it's later.
I think you, me, and your brother then have this weird mid.
Yeah.
But anyways, what
they
I was
must have a name
like,
for you guys.
But what I was saying was, you're the tail end of your generation is the first generation to really have access to live the dream.
Right.
Like our parents, their generation probably had the best generation ever.
Yeah.
With like, you know, just like how much money you can make, how much property you can buy, all that stuff. But we're the ones that
the fundamentals of living.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
being able to manage a family and have a good job. And
yeah, they got to do everything.
Go on vacations. Yeah, sure.
They got to have a shitty job, but then get everything they wanted with the revenue of that shitty job.
Right.
But yeah, we are the ones that actually like had enough, I guess, coasting to whatever, follow our dreams.
Yeah.
And there's like some weird resentment there for sure. But then also it's like, yeah, but our dreams don't do shit. And even if we get a regular job, we don't get shit anymore because you've eaten everything up and destroyed everything.
That's right. It is fascinating. I do look at what, you know, boomer culture did within music, within the arts, within movements, political movements. But at the same time, you know, it's still a lot of these guys running the world and we're living in a difficult moment.
I know. Sometimes I feel like... tweeting at Vanity Fair and being like, hey, Vanity Fair, you got any articles on JFK or Marilyn Monroe or what?
Sure.
It's like, how can you still live worshiping that stupid era?
Right.
It's so dumb.
The equation ends in now. So,
yeah.
I mean, there are some highlights and there are some amazing characters and we lived in a different media landscape so you can champion people in a different way at that time. But the results aren't fantastic.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Speaking of Dick Cavett, I was watching just an excerpt of an interview with him and Robert Mitchum.
Okay.
From like, you know, whatever, 70 or something. 1970. And Robert Mitchum's just this giant presence, like barely saying much. Actually, kind of a boring interview.
Sure.
but he's got his shades on, and the magnanimity of his celebrity is like, I'm like, this does not happen anymore.
Right.
Where a giant, boring, handsome leading man can just sit there for an hour and the TV like glows at you. Right. Who would ever have that now? No one.
There's very few.
Every single celeb now is just a little old rascal, just like us.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's that push for some sort of normalcy so we can all feel like we're on the same plane.
Yeah.
And we miss the days where there were people greater than us.
Yeah. You
know, to be sure that they really felt like they were. They were living a different life.
Yeah.
Yes, our clawing away at celebrity culture and our need to be seen on Instagram and all the rest of it is...
But there's
frightening.
I go up and down because there's a sort of switch there that you can make, which is nice. Like sometimes I get disappointed that, you know, probably even if I got my own TV show, which mm-hmm. I'm always obviously working on,
right,
I'll still have to be the main guy promoting it on Instagram and Twitter. Like, please watch my actual TV show on a TV station.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, everybody's just got to do grassroots PR no matter what these days, because everything's just flooded, so there's no way to be a real celebrity anymore for the most part. But then there's another part of me when I switch that kind of like worry off or like disappointment off, and then I kind of like that I chose to be good at something where I can still be a scoundrel and a rascal until I die, basically.
Right.
You know, I still got to be I'm burping, but like and I still as of now still get to be a dirty little bum bum saying ding dong things with like a hoodie on, and like I can disappear if I want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I do, but and this is something I had thought I wanted to talk to you about, which is there was this model of how you became famous as a comedian or as an actor that served for the longest time. I mean, that's how it was done. And both of us are now, I mean, here we are sitting in my dining room. You were mentioning earlier, the do-it-yourself mentality has become just such a huge part of show business.
Yeah.
But you can turn that key on your brain and say, there is a part of this that I like and serves my life.
You can be sort of like a disgusting retrobate
right.
that has a mass following and no boss editing you, and you can make thousands of dollars a week with a Patreon.
Right.
Why would you pitch something to a network with old school execs that don't get you?
Right.
When you've amassed your own fan base already. I don't mean disgusting retrobate in like a controversial way, like some of these troll like type asshole, even though that does happen.
Yeah, sure it does.
It does. It was interesting to see how the hammer dropped on like, say, Alex Jones or people like that.
Right.
But I mean like, no, I just mean in like a fun little comedy way.
Yeah.
Why would you pitch to execs? Like, it was with my podcast. I pitched, you know, these producers came chasing me.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm like, you know, I was a hard sell. I really didn't understand why, what they would do.
Right.
But they told me, here's what I do.
It has to be distribution, I would think. You know, getting
nothing.
You to...
I got nothing.
Right.
I even did ads for them. I never saw revenue.
Right.
I got nothing. I got one Instagram promo from them once, and I have thousands of more Instagram followers than them anyways, right. And I'm doing my own promo.
Right.
It was really, you know, and I'm not saying I'm like mega. I'm just saying like with what I've amassed, even like in a small scale.
Do you not...
I still have so much more control over my career than someone quote unquote showing up trying to help all of a sudden.
Do you not look at Patreon and some of the success stories there and think to yourself, they're just selling you a pack of dreams there? You know, that would be actually really hard to
but get these are to. Like my it's not Patreon sure. telling me, it's like right. friends that I meet
who've done well.
Like I've gotten followers from into my comedy from showing up on someone's Twitch stream,
sure,
or I've got from showing up on someone's podcast, which this podcast better be fucking good, man. And I'm basically telling you right now, get a Patreon, is what I'm saying.
I got one.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I just started it.
See? So what the hell are you talking
well,
about?
Well, I know, because I'm
don't
just...
Don't jinx it.
I've just got involved with it, and of course, they're sending me all these emails saying, hey, look at what so-and-so did. They made, you know, $60,000 a month in a week, you know? And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me?
Well, I'm not that guy either.
Sure.
I'll see it when I believe it type of thing, right. But it's all like... what's the expression, you know, grease work. What's it called?
Like, yeah, elbow grease.
Elbow grease, that's it. Yeah.
But it's also, I think it actually does revolve around you being talented. You know, if you've
the
got
product has to be good.
The product has to be great. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I got some really shitty ideas.
You are listening to Art at the End of the World. My name is Mark Wigmore. My conversation with Chris Locke continues in just a moment. But first, Art at the End of the World is brought to you by Red Eye Media, an innovator in arts and communications and media relations for over 15 years. Red Eye Media works with leading film, television, and performing arts organizations, including Canadian Stage, Crow's Theatre, the Musical Stage Company, Pacific Northwest Pictures, SummerWorks Performance Festival, and Toronto Dance Theatre, to build their audiences and their impact through engaged, passionate, and strategic communications. For more information on the power of Red Eye, visit redeyemedia.ca. And just a reminder that if you're enjoying this conversation with Chris and you enjoyed last week's conversation with Britta Johnson, you should become a patron of this podcast at patreon.com/artattheendoftheworld. You will receive a bonus mini episode featuring Chris Locke and his top five comedy videos and or albums. I'm going to send that to you today. Should you meet us at the $5 donation level, that gets you the bonus interview as soon as possible. Once again, that's patreon.com/artattheendoftheworld. So let's get back to the show and focus on the theme of this program. Chris is a great comedian. And I talked about this at the beginning of the show. Comedians do such wonderful and important work when it comes to discussing the world's problems and the cultural tipping points of our moment. And they make it digestible. They lighten the load by making us laugh at ourselves and maybe help to create some sort of empathy due to the incredible ridiculousness that is the human experience. And so here's Chris and I digging into art here at the end. When you look at what is going on right now, this age of outrage, it's really hard to convince people one way or the other on any given subject. And now there has been, especially over the last year, year and a half, 2 years, just this influx of fury at comedians for a whole myriad of reasons. And most recently, we saw things like Kevin Hart, Aziz Ansari, Louis C.K. As you are watching that happen, and some of these people, obviously, we were fans of. What is that leading you to believe about what's happening to your craft right now?
Well, I like being happily married.
Uh-huh.
I don't have to date right now.
Sure. That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know. My humor has always basically been pointed back towards myself.
Right.
So for content wise, I'm just making fun of myself and you know, in silliness, I like to get silly, but I don't like, I'm okay with it because I don't like people being the targets of humor much anyways. I mean, you know, whatever. Obviously,
so we look at the Kevin Hart thing, for example. He's not.
Here's my thing. His apology was like, I like the man I've grown up to be. I'm grown since then.
Right.
Get a life, people, type of thing. But my thing about that is like,
but still,
then when you grow up, and delete those tweets, you idiot. Yeah, right. Like, if the Oscars is your dream, go back, type the search word, you know, F-A-G-G-O-T into your Twitter and delete those tweets, you damn fool.
Sure.
Like, you don't have to get mad at everyone else for like, I think it both, yeah, I see both sides. Like, who the hell is mining through everybody's old tweets to try and like ruin their career?
Right. Well, of course, that's exactly what happened post. People have now gone through other people's Twitter pages and found other examples of it. And
to be honest, like, you know, I'm nowhere near being like a celeb or anything, but like a couple years ago when all this stuff was kind of blowing up, I did a bunch of Twitter searches with my handle and a trigger words just to check.
Interesting.
And sure enough, like, you know, even just like you, not in a negative way,
right,
in a crass way, right, but maybe the
disclaimer.
Even like the B word showing up in a tweet, like, sure, from 2009, 2010, I'm like, and it's got like two likes, it's like, this is not worth it. You know what I mean? Like,
let's just wipe this.
I was probably listening to hip hop at the time.
Sure.
So that word was just prevalent in my ears. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm not even attacking people, but it's just like, just clean up your shit. If you've, you know.
You're not overly political in your comedy, from what I can tell, but you sometimes put out opinions out there in social media.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, I saw one, I wish CEOs would, you know, deal with our carbon problems.
I try not to be real online, but like, how many, it's ridiculous.
Right.
I mean, that is like, that's a little broad. I feel like we can mostly relate. I mean, if you're a climate change denier at this point, I mean, I don't know what, show me the websites you read, because that's crazy.
Has that always been, you know, sort of on your radar? You keep an eye on that sort of thing and see what you can do with it?
That tweet was more a joke in my, like, I guess maybe it doesn't obviously read as a joke, but it's one of the more sincere ones I've ever done. But like, that tweet for me comes from like, I'm reading another article again about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
What am I supposed to do?
Right.
I have a travel like water container.
Yeah.
I don't buy plastic bottles anymore. Right. I have reusable shopping bags.
I would say even in this last.
But it's not us. It's the CEOs of the corporations.
It's true.
But the articles are always aimed at us and they make us feel like shit.
It's true. And in fact,
What am I reading about again?
A guy like Richard Florida, who, you know, talks about city planning and so on, his big thing is we really now have to get developers to create buildings that have some sort of affordable housing in them, because that's how we're going to keep our cities flourishing with all different types of people in them.
Yeah.
And that sort of speaks to the whole, all the big problems of the world. It does kind of have to go from the top down.
It's like a cheeky shout out to like, okay, for decades, we've been reading the same article.
Right.
The only other action we can take is protesting.
Right.
And a lot of people do that.
Right.
And a lot of people can't afford to do that. So it's just absurd to me. Life is absurd.
It is. It is. Has family changed your perspective on that? I mean, obviously you've talked a lot about, you know, your wife and I don't know about your kids and your comedy, but
it's like a joke I make now, but it's like 100% real. It's like, whenever I talk about the world, I'm just like, I really think/hope that my daughters are going to just learn how to fly a spaceship and go to a better planet. Right. Like, that's the future I actually try to hope for them.
Sure.
Because I don't know what's going to happen.
One of your characters I love, and maybe it's just an Instagram character, I don't know, is City Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you wander around the city and make some sort of loud comments about what's around you, and it's fantastic. I love it.
Oh, thanks.
It's really funny.
What's up, everyone? It's City Boy! Yeah, oh, man, check it out. Damn, killer night in the city, man. I just came from a bar where everyone's drinking cocktails and everybody is pretty and handsome. Man, that's crazy. Man, I just found out, like, Kelly Clarkson's gotten, like, a big expensive divorce. Man, that's too much. You gotta keep it real, man. Try to stay together. Love is where it's at. Damn, what's up? Keep checking me out. Thanks for checking out City Boy.
I deleted a lot for a while because my wife embarrassed me, because I don't think she really gets the sort of, like, you know, social media kind of humor.
Right.
Which is like, obviously that's a parody of whatever, someone who thinks is self-important or whatever.
Yeah, they're out there in the world excited
about...
What's
up, everybody?
Yeah, like, excited they got about fans. Being on the street. Yeah.
So I deleted them feeling embarrassed, but then literally traveling around the country as a stand-up, people would say, I love that...
City Boy.
Yeah, and I'm like,
he's very funny.
So I brought it back recently.
You did. I saw it. And you, but then you switched him to Nature Boy. At some
for
point.
A bit, yeah, and then I made a web series about a guy that goes crazy in the nature,
and that got picked up with Funny or Die.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was kind of cool.
That was really cool.
Say hello to this guy. This guy's a rock, and rocks are important. You know why? Because they're the foundation of our Earth. Without rocks, we'd be falling right now into a pit of lava and burning to death. But I'm not going to talk about that right now because death freaks me out. Come on, let's talk to rocks.
And it was very funny. I think it showed your ability to let a little space into your comedy and so on, right? You let it breathe.
That was my friend Derek, who's directed a lot of stuff with me and made stuff with me. He's a whiz with all that stuff, and we have fun together. We're always brainstorming stuff, but that was me and him basically going crazy in the woods.
It seemed like it made it feel
even
like...
Even though there was a production company behind it, we unfortunately pitched it as low budget.
Right.
So it was super low budget. So out of my own pocket, I paid my good comedy friend, Aaron Eves, to be my, just help us.
Yeah.
So it was like the three of us literally laughing and going insane in the woods.
Right. Yeah. It made me feel like you actually do love getting out in nature.
I really do. Yeah. But I also think, like, this is an influence from my real dad, which we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. He was super idealistic about a time that, let's be frank, didn't ever exist. You know, like, a lot of libertarians are like that. Mm-hmm. They want to go back in time, but there is no time to what they're referring to.
Right.
And so there's something about a guy thinking that he can escape to nature and being real again. The truth about it, that you're just going to freeze and die, right, is the funniest thing to me.
That's right. You mentioned in one of them, everything's great. I could live out here. What would I miss? Oh, a meatball sub.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually what saves my life at the end.
Sure.
Oh, I gave it away. Right. I hope you watch it. It's on there somewhere.
It is.
I heard Funny or Die is getting picked up by somebody, another website now. So
an even bigger website than
Funny or Die?
How could that be?
Yeah, I know. But do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
The hypocrisy of being idealistic.
I have a...
It's my philosophical conundrum that I love.
I have a tricky situation in that I have a very libertarian, Trumpian supporting brother.
Oh.
Yeah.
In BC?
No, he's here. So the two of us are our only...
Get out of here.
He's my only family member. In fact, he lived in that apartment with me the first year I moved there in 2000.
Yeah.
And then he moved back out west.
So he would just look out the window and see all the halfway houses and go...
I don't know if he was quite there yet.
No, I'm just joking.
He wasn't fully formed, but he definitely has opinions on everything.
On us helping people?
Sure.
Very nice.
The latest was the other day I told him that the legislation in Ontario is changing so that these big companies can dump all kinds of chemicals into our water supply. And he's like, well, you shouldn't be drinking that water anyway. You got to go buy bottle stuff, man.
Oh,
I'm
no.
Like, come on.
Does he work for Nestle or something?
Yeah, really. But I thought, oh, goodness.
An old convo I remember having with my dad. And I wish I was smarter back then because I didn't have sophisticated convos with him as much. I was more like... Just everything was like emotional at the time.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like I could lead by my gut, but he had this, like, I was like, okay, I was trying to understand his world, and I'm like, okay, so say you do have like yourself, everything's, you got the garden, you're doing everything yourself, you have a barter system with your neighbors.
Right.
So at night, someone starts showing up and stealing your vegetables or something.
Right.
Or worse.
You're basically just describing the outdoor part of a Grateful Dead concert in about 1990.
Which is sheltered by a gate eventually. Right? You walk far enough, there's a fence bordering.
Yeah.
You're in a little village. Yeah.
So you create that, and you were thinking about this with your dad, and you create all this.
Yeah. And I'm like, so what do you do when there's stealing? And he's like, well, then he's already like, you know, searching his brain.
Right.
Like it's not ready.
Sure.
So it's like, well, then we have a little like agreement on how to serve justice. And I'm like, you're just building our culture again from scratch.
Yeah, you're making it up as you go along.
Just admit that. And here's another thing about idealistic North Americans.
Sure.
The reason why we get to think that things were different in the 50s and 60s is because we're still a baby of a country.
Right.
You literally were like a baby running around in like the biggest playpen. Canada still isn't 100% real yet. And it's getting there, and now we're seeing even the resistance.
Right.
Quote unquote, which I would never attribute that name to it myself. But we're already seeing hard stuff like that happening in Canada just because it's growing a little bit.
Right.
It's ridiculous to think that there was like an idealistic time.
It is, and it all, if you really want a 30,000 foot it, then you talk about, well, we're basically north of a superpower. We've got the insulation of capitalism, the best of capitalism at our fingertips. And so how would we ever really know what the good old days are? They're just the good old days of this system that we've been kind
of that thing
in.
That happened at the Vancouver airport recently.
Right.
What does that tell us?
Sure.
We're nothing but the America's goons.
Right.
Of course we are.
We are.
We're like the spoiled kids living in, like, you're right, like an attic that has a dartboard and a pinball machine, you know, like, thanks, guys.
Quick anecdote about Grateful Dead concerts.
Don't get mad at me. You know it's true.
For some reason, I thought you might think this was funny, but I remember going to a Dead show in 1993 or something, and there's a whole bunch of hippies all set up, and they're selling electric grilled cheese sandwiches and like veggie burritos and stuff, and they're really hawking these things and hitting, you know, maybe the occasional guy, and then you got this kind of just greasy dude, gruff looking guy selling burgers just like a couple doors down.
And how long is that line?
He's got the hugest line.
Exactly. That's everything in a nutshell.
Right.
Stop talking out of your ass. That's what it is. People don't want, that's where my comedy comes from.
Right.
People don't. Yeah, that's exactly it. You nailed it. People don't want life to be as actually simple as it is.
Right.
They complicate it. We're the only creature that, like, luckily, you know, has the capacity to have an imagination and blah, 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 and all that stuff. But the thing that comes with that consciousness and that imagination is we're just animals that over-intellectualize basic animal behavior.
Sure.
It's so funny.
Right.
To me, it's the funniest thing. I love it.
Comedy Network 2014, that was another nice accolade for you.
What was that?
Weren't you like called the... you did the best video or the best...
No, comedy? There's a thing called the Canadian Comedy Award.
Right, yeah, of course.
It's nice. I got like 2014 Best Male Stand-Up.
Right.
But, you know, it's one of those Canadian accolades where as soon as you get it, other people are telling you it doesn't mean anything.
And I've loved you on Mr. D, where you work with your wife, I guess, off and on. And
yeah, she's Miss Turdy.
Yeah.
The librarian.
Yeah,
she's amazing on it.
She's so funny. I actually really like that show. Mark Little and I sometimes get in arguments about the, you know, the validity.
Are you guys old buds from BC?
No, I was a big fan of Picnic Face, and so I kind of seeked him out, and we've just become sort of acquaintances. We see each other.
Oh, that's
saw each other at Cirque du Soleil one time and kind of hung out.
That's funny.
So ridiculous. And I interviewed him on one of my old shows, but...
way back in the day, in about 2008 or 7, I flew out to Halifax to help my friend Nathan with something on 22 Minutes. Uh-huh. And then I ended up doing stand-up for one of the Picnic Face shows, like the live show.
Right.
This is obviously way before they made the TV season.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it was at this place called, I think, Ginger's or something like that.
Yeah, people...
It was massive.
Loved that scene.
It was massive.
Yeah. I've talked to... My stepdaughter and stepson lived there and went to Ginger's to see them during that time. So they used to... Just tell me.
They saw me do stand up.
You have to see these. You have to see these guys.
And it was wild.
I remember they played just a couple nights, I think, at Second City, just as they were kind of exploding with the show.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you go?
So I went, and that was a real treat to see them live.
Oh, nice.
Sort of sad. I'm always a little sad that Picnic Face kind of, you know, I suppose.
Next time you talk to Mark, ask him if he sleeps.
Right.
Because I think it's impossible.
Right.
He's a workhorse to the max. It's crazy.
He really is.
Yeah.
Funny guy.
In fact, I don't know. I can't talk about anything I've done.
Right.
I can only think of what Mark has done.
We sometimes get into little mini arguments about the quality of the comedy on Mr. D and so on. But ultimately, yeah. I think he's...
We've talked about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's...
He's a
great on that
creator.
Show.
He wants to make what he wants to... His thing.
You've been funny. Yeah, right. I'm sure it's kind of the same thing for you, right? Hopefully you can bring out something of yourself.
Well, I get to act characters. Every now and then on Baroness von Sketch.
I've been watching
on that.
I would
like to say that I would always be a huge proponent for that show. I love those guys.
Now, you played a record exec in one of the episodes this season.
I wrote
season.
That sketch too.
Oh, did you? It was funny. She's singing the menu.
I would say production-wise, it didn't come out the way I wrote it.
Right.
They may have changed it a bit, but I still loved working with those guys.
And then there was another one where the woman is pregnant. She's having a baby, and they have to kind of get her prepared.
Oh yeah.
And they're
I got a nice little button on that scene.
Yeah, they're shaving her. And then so they're trying to explain that this has to happen, and they pan over to you, and there you are, and you're shaving your,
giant bush of my balls.
Right.
You don't see it, don't worry.
No.
But, yeah, I show up every now and then.
It's nice to see you there.
I just filmed a couple sketches for their next season, and...
It's been a heck of a success.
It was
success
so
story.
Nice to be back on that set, because, like, Aurora and all them, and Carolyn, and... Meredith and Jen, like, down.
Yeah.
Even, like, behind the scenes, everybody involved is awesome.
There's a lot of Second City, former Second City.
Yeah. Yeah, I just filmed one involved. Scene. Hopefully it makes it next year with Becky Johnson and Paul Bates.
Okay, right.
And that was
Becky
really...
Johnson, so funny.
Yeah. So I hope that one makes it because it's pretty fun.
How are you juggling road life with family life and, you know, your wife's busy, too? And
so my latest trip to BC was 10 days.
Right.
That might be too long now.
Right.
I might have to break it up. So I was about to go in February. I was going to go out to Alberta for about 10 days, you know, a weekend in Calgary and a week in Edmonton. And I don't think I broke it up.
Yeah.
So now it's going to be like a weekend in Calgary, a couple months later, a week in
this
Edmonton.
Is such the trajectory of the getting, you know, becoming an adult father comedian, right?
It just makes me want to be more in control of stuff at home. Right. So it's good, though, because it's made me brainstorm some new projects. And yeah, because it's like nothing beats the coziness of us all laughing at home.
Yeah. I was delighted and horrified as I watched you do a joke about your wife going for a run. Well, and you took that time, that same allotted time that it was going to take her to do a run, to then go buy a large bag of barbecue chips and eat them all, and then fold up the package that the chips came
hide in. Hide it in the garbage.
And hide it in the garbage. And I was...
But then it uncrinkles.
It uncrinkles, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And I was both, I was laughing my head off, but also mortified because I've done that 100 times. And it's an awful... Yeah.
I kind of did that way more before the kids were born.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Food. I'm now going through the vices. I've now decided at age 43 that food has been probably the most difficult one for me to deal with because I've used it as a reward system for so long.
I have friends that I can text and I go, do you want to get an Indian roti today?
Yeah.
They usually do. And then we go and meet at the restaurant and we look at each other and we go, we're drug addicts.
Yes. It is drugs.
In the old neighborhood, too, there's a place, Lansdowne and Queen, called Glory of India.
Okay.
Everyone,
you love a roti. And you were praising the ramen that you had out in Vancouver.
Yeah, there's a place that I went to on Robson. I think they've got a couple locations, but it's definitely the best ramen I've ever tried. And I went there with Aaron Charles Reed from the Sunday Service.
Nice.
Probably one of the all-time funniest guys in Canada.
Wow.
Yeah.
But food.
But yeah,
gift that keeps on giving.
We barely talked. We just slurped down that ramen. Yeah.
I have such a hateful, like I'll sometimes if I really want to treat myself and it's late on a Saturday night, I've had a few drinks, I'll go get a thing of Cherry Garcia and I'll enjoy those first few bites. It's like, this is good. That's so tasty.
You actually look like a healthy Jerry Garcia, by the way,
right,
for anyone listening.
Thank you very much.
I've seen what Mark looks like.
I think that's a compliment.
When you said Cherry Garcia, I'm like, that's it. That's what it is.
So I'm
sorry.
Yeah. I get halfway through and then I realize there is no enjoyment to this whatsoever. The flavors are now well entrenched into my mouth.
Yeah, that's the thing.
There's a turning point there.
I know exactly what you mean. Even when you discover that your favorite go-to comfort foods actually taste like synthetic poison.
Sure.
You still finish the whole thing. Like I have that with barbecue chip Ruffles.
Right.
I haven't done it in a long time because to me it's like smoking two cigarettes now. That's what it feels like after.
Right.
Oh, there's poison in my blood.
Right. Yeah, you can actually feel the you've wrecked things a little bit.
But it's a trigger. And you know what? Maybe we figured something out psychologically about me today. Because when we moved to the suburbs of Toronto, like Etobicoke.
Right.
And then my parents did become a bit more conservative, not politically, but just, you know. And then...
Trying to be responsible parents, I suppose.
I do realize that a lot of my comfort food cravings come from birthday parties. like pizza and chips in a bowl, and like, and it's like, I'm totally like, those meant obviously so much to me, and I was like trying to recreate by yourself. You're trying to recreate a party at like 40 years old.
Well, the nice thing is you can reward yourself for no reason at all.
Yeah.
You can, it's not a special occasion anymore. You can just, you know, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
I've got money and I can go buy that pizza or whatever. I still do it.
I had a revelation, like my 20s, my late 20s, early 30s, when I was still like mostly living on my own, I was living in one room down by like, you know, Trinity Bellwoods Park area. And everything I had was in that room. That was it. And I shared a bathroom kitchen with roommates, but we didn't know each other. So it was like pretty private.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times I would buy like a big bag of chips, maybe order a pizza.
Sure.
Or I'd get Chippies from, remember Chippies?
Mm.
Fish and chips. Were you always East End for the last little while?
I've been East End ever since you and I parted ways.
You don't really know Chippies.
No,
but
I don't.
You can imagine.
I can't.
Deep fried fish and chips.
Sure.
But I would eat that whole thing and put on a movie.
Right.
And I'd be like, I have the best life. And now looking back, I'm like, oh, I was really depressed.
Sure. Yeah.
I did that one night in Vancouver.
Yeah.
I had one, so I was out there for 10 days. I had one night off, no show. And I'm like, good. No drinking tonight. Yeah. Stay in.
Yeah.
Get some work done. Yeah. Oh, this is actually... Man, you should lead with this anecdote. So I leave the hotel.
Yeah.
I go to a 7-Eleven on Robson, and there's basically a dead guy on the... But first of all, I'm going to the 7-Eleven.
Okay.
I did not
so
go to the 7-Eleven.
The possibilities of seeing a dead guy go up dramatically, yeah. Especially in Vancouver.
But he was, I swear, dead.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. Then the paramedics come out, and they use this sort of like breathing machine, sort of like a CPR machine, since obviously we've created that so you don't have to touch mouths with this gentleman. But
sure.
So and then all of a sudden I see these giant gusts of air blasting his stomach up and his rib cage up, you know, so it's obviously inflating. And they give him a needle and stuff, and they're monitoring his everything and his blood or whatever, heart rate. He comes back to life. Now here's my thing. They clearly brought him back to life.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it was the most still human body I've ever seen, except one other time I did see someone die.
Right.
So they brought him back to life. Once I saw that he was breathing on his own accord without their help, I went into 7-Eleven and got chips. But there was a part of me watching him like, if this guy's dead, I can't fucking get chips.
Right.
You can't watch a guy die and then go get chips. That's just not how the world should work.
No, you have to make a different plan at that point. Maybe go get a salad somewhere else or what have
you. Or just like starve to death. That's what the old Brahmin would do.
So was the other person you saw die, was that a family member or was that just a different situation?
No, but I have seen a family member dead. Yeah. But no... I used to live, like I was saying, in the Junction before I moved to Parkdale. And then I was walking home one night up Keele, for all the Toronto heads listening. It was rush hour. And, you know, like rush hour on Keele, the cars are going down Parkside to the QEW.
My brother lives around there, yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like, it's not super fast, but it's probably about 60.
Mm-hmm.
And I see this giant woman. And I say giant probably because more of like a numerous amount of coats she's wearing.
Okay.
And like a bunch of bags in her hand.
Right.
And I was listening to my Discman because I hadn't,
those are the days.
I hadn't gotten an MP3 player yet.
Sure.
And I was coming home from work and I said in my head, I thought, this woman's going to die. Because I was genuinely like, whoa, look out, you know?
Yeah.
And she did.
She did.
A bus hit her going one way. She flew into oncoming traffic going the other way. A car hit her. She flew in front of that car. And before the car knew what was going on, it ran, continued to run over.
My Lord.
That's what I saw.
That's terrifying. Yeah. Yeah.
For those of you listening, I just mimed taking all off a joint to make it all go away. But anyways, that was a dead person.
Of course.
It looked like a squirrel at that point.
And,
like, it was really inhuman. It was crazy.
And my guess is that you didn't buy chips after that.
Not immediately. But the era we're talking about, chips were all over the place anyways.
Sure.
Chips and pizza. But it looked like, speaking of 7-Eleven, and this is quite crass, but it's 100% accurate. It looked like someone spilt a slushy beside her head.
Sweet Lord.
Yeah, I saw that with mine own eyes.
My goodness.
I think this is where the podcast should start, to be honest. I don't like all that real stuff in the beginning.
Start or end.
Yeah, let's end it all, to be honest. We're all trapped.
All right, Chris Locke, it was a real pleasure to spend some time with you today and to reconnect. And I'm so happy for how your career has gone and how it continues to go and that you're a family man. And thank you for being on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. It was my pleasure and everything you said.
Wasn't that great? I had such a wonderful time speaking with Chris Locke. He will be at the Comedy Bar on February 9th. Messy Hole featuring Chris with the great Sean Cullen. Once again, that's February 9th at Comedy Bar. He'll be at Levity Comedy Club in Hamilton. That's February 14th. Little Valentine's night through the 16th. And Laugh Shop in Calgary, February 29th through March 2nd. So that's it. Don't forget, you can support Art at the End of the World with our Patreon page. If you donate at the $5 level, two things happen. You get the next episode early before anybody else, and you also get a very special bonus feature, Chris Locke explaining his top five comedy albums and or videos of all time. So if you would like to get your hands on that, Patreon.com/art at the end of the world. Thank you once again to our sponsors today, Kerner Hall at the Royal Conservatory of Music, Salter Street Brewery, Superframe Framing Services, and Red Eye Media. And thanks to you. Thanks for checking out this second episode of the show. You can get in touch, art@theendoftheworld.com, art@theendoftheworld@gmail.com, and we're on Facebook, Twitter, the handle on Twitter, @ArtAtTheEnd, and my Instagram handle is @WigDad. Have a great week, and we'll see you with the bonus round on Thursday.